fun to do bad things.
That's real, yo. That dream at all, man. The more money you make, the more problems you get. And jealousy and envy is something that comes with the territory, man. A lot of people, it's just negative energy, like my man Puff said.
What country you from?
What?
What ain't no country I ever heard of? They speak English and what?
What?
English, mother, do you speak it?
Man, you been doing all this dope producing. You ain't had a chance to show them what time it is.
So what you want me to do?
Welcome to the Spurs Cast, the original San Antonio Spurs podcast.
Congratulations, you have arrived at episode 412 of the Spurs Cast, the original San Antonio Spurs podcast brought to you by ProjectSpurs.com. I'm your host, Ryan McCallum, and casting the pods with me tonight is future Donald Trump campaign manager. I think he's had three or four of those so far. Next up is Mr. Jose Grijalva. Jose, say hello to all those Spurs Cast fans.
Just all the people that hear us, I guess, right? Because, I mean, we got fans, we got people who just listen to spite us sometimes. You know, I'm kind of nervous because I think I forgot how to do this. What about you? It's been a while, hasn't it? Two, 3 weeks?
How to do the podcast?
Yeah. Just to talk into a microphone.
I don't think I've ever actually learned how to do this appropriately, you know, based on the feedback that we get from the fan base. The Filipinos love us. I think everybody else hates us. I think they hate me. They love you. Everybody loves you. You're their friendly neighborhood, you know,
I'm a lovable, short bodybuilder wannabe.
You know, I got a friend who actually is a bodybuilder. Do you know, I mean, I'm sure you have friends that are, because you do that. But this guy, I never expected him to do it. And I found myself, like, looking at food. like I was going to say, should I eat these chips? And I thought, what would Nick do? And that literally crossed my mind. Because this guy just eats totally clean. He's shredded, too. I mean, it's amazing. It's just amazing. But he's a little guy, too. I mean, he's like 5. He can't be 5'8". So I guess they have all kinds of weight divisions for that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, one day I hope to get into that. You know, I just can't eat clean. I tried it for, I think it was half a year, 6 months, 7 months. I lost like 50 pounds because I carry a lot of water. I lost all that water and plus all that fat. But I just did not feel comfortable. Once I could fit into skinny jeans, I just said no. I just didn't want to do it anymore. So now I just eat whatever, and I spend like 2-3 hours at the gym just going all hardcore. And that really has killed my social life, because by the end of the week, literally I just get home after the gym. I'll make food, you know, for the family. I'll do whatever I have to do. And then by 6, I just throw myself, and I'm done.
See, I couldn't do it. I think it's just giving up beer is the problem. Beer and alcohol is I think the thing that throws most people off of that track, especially men. I mean, it's tough to go without, you know, if you, because I know you're not a drinker, and I don't know what constitutes being a drinker. Do you enjoy a drink every once in a while? Or are you an alcoholic? I mean, there's huge gaps between those two things. But I hate that phrase, like, are you a drinker or are you not? I would consider myself somebody who enjoys a couple of beers, a couple of times a week. That quantity of maybe like 6 beers a week will destroy your ability to eat clean.
Well, we did a podcast and you were at a bar, right, getting plastered. So, I mean, I think we believe that. But why don't you just take up liquor? Less calories.
Well, is it less calories?
Well, yeah. You know,
I think just, like rum is just pure sugar, right? I'm looking at 2 bottles of tequila over there.
I was going to say, I don't check out the nutritional facts for alcohol.
Well, I'm looking at 2 bottles of tequila that are sitting over there on the floor in the corner of my little space here, my little podcasting space. I got these 2 bottles in the duty-free place in Mexico City this week. As we play Where in the World is Ryan.
Oh, so that's where you were. That's where you couldn't answer my emails, right? Not my emails, my direct messages.
Exactly.
Selling in American encyclopedias in Mexico City, right? Is that what we're going with this week?
That's the story. That's the story this week. But don't worry about what I do, man. Let's worry about what the Spurs do. This is a Spurs heavy. You like that segue, by the way? This is a Spurs heavy podcast. I don't even think we're going to touch base on, you know, general NBA news at all. There hasn't been a whole lot out there. I mean, Ben Simmons hurt his foot. I don't think there's a whole lot of 76er fans here. So I think that's the only real NBA news that's fit to print.
I was actually kind of sad because I was excited to see him. You know, they tried to play him sort of in that point guard type role, and I was, you know, excited to see what he could do. I think it was because he gained weight that, you know, pretty fast. What did he say? He gained like 33 pounds?
Gained 33 pounds of LeBron James muscle. And, dude, I saw, if you go to NBA.com, and if folks are listening to this, it'll be Tuesday, October 4th by the time this podcast goes up. Go out to NBA.com and still see if they have this picture up. Ben Simmons is sitting like on the training table getting treatment from the trainer. He looks like, first off, he looks like he's like 260, 265. And his size compared to the guy who's giving him treatment is staggering. Like he makes the guy, the trainer, look like he is probably 5'3". He looks tiny. I mean, super tiny compared to Mr. Simmons.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I just take word of mouth for it, you know. He broke his foot, then I believe it. You know, I don't know what it is, because, I mean, he was pretty built. I don't know if it was, like, leg day, you know, because a lot of those guys really just build up the upper body and not really the legs. So I don't know if it was because of that. Ingram said that's why he didn't want to gain a lot of weight. The guy was Ingram was eating like 5,000 calorie a day diet, which I don't really believe, because I mean I sort of saw him in person and I was thinking like no way this guy was eating that much and I you know gaining that much weight, because I mean he's a stick from what I think. So I still missed leg day. If he wouldn't have missed leg day so much, I don't think we'd be having this conversation with about Simmons. But of course he's not the brute of the glute like me, so right. I do legs 3 times a week.
See, I've been missing leg day for the past 15 years.
All that walking you do, bro. I bet you're built like a cyclist.
Dude, leg day is, that doesn't give you beach muscles, man.
I don't even have beach muscles. I have the coating on top of the beach muscles, which keeps everything soft.
Gotcha. Well, let's hit some Spurs stuff then, since we got rid of the one and only NBA, general NBA story. But this isn't really even news, but I just want to ask you the question because, you know, Kawhi Leonard is in rare territory. There's only been a few guys that have been able to accomplish this feat, and the last one being Dwight Howard, and that's to win the Defensive Player of the Year 3 times. Kawhi's got 2. Do you think that he could win another Defensive Player of the Year award this season? And should that be his personal goal, or should he have higher aspirations than that? And then I want to ask you about folks that could challenge him for the Defensive Player of the Year award.
I think he has a real good chance, especially if the Spurs are the second seed. And, you know, last season, Steph Curry won the MVP, right? The Warriors got the best record in the league. You know, I think Kawhi winning the Defensive Player of the Year was a lock, even though he was the best person to win it, but I think he was going to get it anyways because of what the Spurs accomplished that season. So I think if the Spurs can at least get the second seed, and even if their overall defense sucks, because again, you're missing Tim Duncan protecting the rim, I think he still wins it just because, you know, I think the NBA is going to feel like they have to give him something for the efforts that the Spurs, you know, that the Spurs have done. Well, why are the Spurs the number 2 seed or the number 1 seed if they get that lucky and the Warriors don't get that top seed? You know, they're going to say because of Kawhi and how he plays both sides of the floor. So I think he's basically a lock for it. I cannot think of anybody else who can win it. You know, I just really can't think of anybody else. Wiggins, maybe. You know, if he plays sort of a lockdown defense with Thibodeau as his coach, you know that could work. But I see really Kawhi as a lock for Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah, I think it's really strong that he could get there, and I think that he's going to get recognized for it again. And I hope he does, obviously, because I'm biased. But you know, anytime that this guy gets a chance to make history is huge. The only I have four other players that I want to go through. I can see four of these other guys getting getting consideration for Defensive Player of the Year. The first one is probably the one that most folks that are listening to this are thinking about, and that's Draymond Green. I could see, because he was second last year as well, right?
Runner-up last year? He came in second.
It was either, he got runner-up 2 years ago. I think he got it up last year. He's a solid defensive player. I wonder if his contribution is going to stay at such a high level, or, you know, are signs of him becoming more of a loose cannon on that team, or those, is that going to translate into his defensive, ability? And I also just don't think that the NBA likes Draymond Green. You know, I don't think that the upper brass like him. I don't think that fans like him outside of Golden State. And it takes both of those things when you're politicking for votes, right? Kawhi Leonard is the likable one out of the two there. So I feel like that's going to limit Draymond Green's success, not just in the NBA in general. And this is me talking about a guy who won a title, right? But individual accolades, I think that's going to draw down his success. Sometimes, you look at Draymond Green and you could put him in that dirty player category, and you can't do that with Kawhi Leonard. So that's why I think Kawhi Leonard beats out Draymond Green.
I was going to say, you mentioned the cheap shot player, right? They're making a rule about that this time, right? Like, if they see a...
Unnatural act is what they're calling it.
I don't even know why they call it that. Why don't they just call it a non-basketball move, an unnatural act? That sounds like dirty, you know? Like, that automatically just makes you think hits the junk in some way, like a grab or something.
Well, I'm just amazed that they have to call that out at all. Like, how is that not a foul? How are you not crack? I mean, to crack down on it means that they were just giving folks a free pass prior.
But when you say folks, it was just him. I can't really think of anybody else who went through that situation. Maybe one or two. But this guy, you know... It's sort of like you said, I dare you to do something about it. But, yeah, I'll agree with you that the majority of the league probably doesn't like him. You know, but in this situation, with Durant there, you know, I just don't know how they're going to play it. I mean, I think he's going to be a little bit more exposed. I think they're going to go with more of a double team sometimes with to help out Green, and it's going to be more obvious, especially with how big Durant is. And if they go, you know, small ball, you saw what small ball can do against Draymond. I think a lot of more teams are going to try that, you know, where they're just going to attack and make him move, to the sides and then try to get him off balance. I just think the league is going to be catching on to this, because remember, the league caught on to San Antonio doing that little pressure, remember, off the pick and pop that they would do. I mean, just pressure. The Cavs sort of emulated that, and then they went small against them. So I think the league is going to be paying attention to the finals, and I don't think he'll be in that discussion. I think we'll see a new number two defensive guy behind Kawhi this year.
Yeah, quite possibly. You know, one thing I want to build on is something that you said about the Spurs, about how they're going to be somewhat exposed because there's no Tim Duncan that's back there patrolling the paint right next to the rim. You could say the same thing about Golden State. With no Bogut there, I agree with you. I think that Draymond Green is going to get exposed. I don't think that Zaza could do what Andrew Bogut could do. I don't think that there's the depth there at that position. I agree with you. I think Draymond's going to get exposed. He probably is, to your point, not even a runner-up for that award.
Well, think about it this way, and this is what a lot of people forget about Andrew Bogut. The guy could shoot. The guy could pass. He was basically... He could do what Splitter could do, and sometimes with what Diao could do, you know, not really shoot the three, but I mean, he could do a lot of different stuff that a lot of big guys can't do. That's why he caused so much trouble.
Yeah.
Zaza can't do any of that. You know, Zaza's guy's going to be in the paint waiting. So if the other teams want to go and, you know, try to pressure the three or try to, get up on Draymond, what's Draymond going to do? He's going to drive it. Well, somebody's going to be there. He's not really that good of a passer, you know. Making that split decision like a small forward or a shooting guard or a point guard. So I think they're really going to get exposed. So, and then what's really going to, I think that's going to happen with them is they're going to be forced to go small. They're going to be forced probably with that, what do they call it, that death ball lineup, where they're probably going to put Draymond at the five, and then they're going to move everybody, you know, up, you know, probably Durant at the four, Clay at the, you know, or Iguodala at the three, you know, whatever they might do.
Right.
But I think they're going to stick to that. That's not really a defensive lineup.
No.
So I think, you know, especially with the Spurs, I'm going to do a really homer type prediction here. You know, he's going to have trouble with Gasol and Aldridge, because both of those guys can do basically what, you know, I mean, the same thing. They can spot up, shoot up in mid-range. They can post up. They can pick and roll, pick and pop. I mean, that's going to be the type of play that's going to expose Golden State. So, yeah, I think we both agree that Draymond's really going to see an off-year defensively. And I don't think it'll be an off-year. I think that teams are just going to say, okay, this is how you play him.
Exactly.
You know, we'll just keep going at it. With Kawhi, you can't really do that because, I mean, the guy's a freak with those big paws and those long arms. And you know, he has the height. So, I mean, you can't really play Kawhi, you know, differently. You just have to be lucky that he falters somewhere on his man defense.
The other guy I want to bring up is, you know, certainly a defensive specialist, and that's Hassan Whiteside. This is a guy who has the tools to be a defensive player of the year. That's what he's known for, big shot block numbers. Is this the year that Whiteside can take the next step and maybe challenge for that? Or what's it going to take for a guy like Whiteside in a very traditional big man role to step into the defensive player of the year circle, if you want, consideration?
I don't think too much, and this is really the most horrible time for him. If he's hoping that he comes out in that consideration, you know, I mean, he doesn't have Wade and Bosch, and, you know, to sort of take that pressure off of him. Remember, he was really good when all he had to do was just play defense. Now they're probably going to have to post him up with what they paid him, and he's really going to be maybe the first, second option on that offense. So, I mean, is he going to have the stamina, the endurance to play both sides of the floor and keep playing the center position dominantly defensively? I don't think so. Just because it's going to be his first year, he's going to have to get used to it. I think he could, pretty much grow into the role with some patience. But next year or this upcoming year, I don't see that. I think the third guy that's going to be mentioned in that, or maybe bump up to number two, is going to be Karl Anthony Towns, with a defensive-minded coach. Especially how he really took the defensive anchor from that team. Maybe he gets some of that KG swag,
true,
you know, that maybe rubbed off on him. Hopefully not the trash talk from what, you know, the stories we've heard. But
right.
Hopefully, I mean, I think that's the guy that's going to bump up from the big man position up to the consideration, not really Whiteside.
You know, no, that's a great point. I mean, and I know you hate this, so I'm going to say it, but Cat, I left him off this list. I should have had him on there. But you're right, Karl Anthony Towns, especially with that coach up there, should be in that consideration. You know what? I'm going to replace Hassan Whiteside with Karl Anthony Towns on my list. I agree with you.
And he's probably going to get more minutes because Thibodeau doesn't really believe in the bench. So, I mean, those five guys are probably going to be getting the majority of them. Maybe they all get consideration for Defensive Player of the Year.
The next guy, this is actually going to be my fantasy basketball team name, but it's Gobert or go home. And I think Rudy Gobert could be the guy who steps in and challenges for Defensive Player of the Year. What are your thoughts?
I forgot about him, especially when I was talking about him for the past like 2 days with that Jazz team. I like the guy. He was one of the reasons why the Warriors were fearing the Jazz. You know, and that's why the Jazz gave them so much trouble. I mean, they were talking about Hayward, you know, how they switched Curry on him and he exposed Curry. Curry, you know, had trouble playing both sides of the floor. But Gobert was one of the guys that, again, nobody could guard him. All you had to do was throw the ball up and he would finish it.
Right.
It didn't have to be a dunk. It could be, you know, just a little layup. But, I mean, he had the height advantage against everybody. And especially with that Jazz team, if Boris Diaw can play a few minutes next to him, you know, and they could sort of play that first type defense where they funnel and he can get those blocks and defensive rebounds after missed shots, maybe number four. I think this might be the year of the big man where they all bump up instead of those perimeter defenders.
Yeah, it could definitely be. I mean, like you pointed it out, Gobert's got size on everyone, right? There's not a matchup where he doesn't line up because he can move as well. That's the other thing, is his footwork is so good. I'm a big fan of Rudy Gobert. I think that he's going to be excellent in this league for a long time. And you don't see that with guys that are that big, that are that tall. I think that he's going to – I don't know if there's a corner to be turned because he seems to be on a pretty rapid trajectory to start him. I mean, if he was playing in Miami and wasn't playing in Utah, I think we'd talk more about Rudy Gobert. That being said, we talk about him a lot.
Well, he's French. We don't talk about the French.
Yeah. Well, the last guy that I want to bring up that can challenge Kawhi is the guy that I brought up at the very beginning of this. How about a revamped, new environment, hometown favorite, Dwight Howard in Atlanta?
Oh, gosh, no. I think they regressed. I just can't see him playing a full season. You know, what made Dwight great, and I think this is what they appreciated or really made him stand out, was the fact that he could play both sides of the floor. And you kept talking about Dwight the whole way, you know, the way he dominated, and you kept talking about him the whole game. I don't think he can be that guy only on the defensive end without getting the ball. As we saw with Lakers, as we saw with the Rockets, if he doesn't get the touches that he thinks he deserves, he sort of steps off on the defensive end. He, you know, stops playing that, you know, with that passion. I don't think they do that well, you know. Or I don't think he does that well. You know, in the East, he could be an all-star. But I don't think defensive player of the year. I don't think he does that. Or it comes anywhere.
So I think that he's got those skills, but you're right. It's the mindset. The challenge of him accepting a defensive first role on that team is going to be the challenge. He's got the tools. I feel like he could compete for defensive player of the year if he resigns himself to just focusing on his defense, and I'm not sure that he can. If he can, I think he's definitely in that you know, top four, top five, you know, rating of folks that could compete for that award. That all being said, I tend to agree with you. I almost never take, you know, this in a scenario of this guy versus the field. I almost never take that guy because there's so many players that can step up that we're not even talking about that can move into that elite category defensively, and they can come from anywhere. I mean, they could be a point guard. They could be a big man. You said you think it's the year of the big man. It could be a wing player. We don't know who it could be. So many people can challenge for that type of a role that you almost never want to take Kawhi Leonard. In this case, I think you have to take Kawhi. You said he was a lock. Do you still agree that he's a lock?
Oh, I think he's a lock. The only thing that would probably not make him a lock is, and you're going to call me crazy about this, I think if the Spurs can play that type of defense that they played last season, keep up the same numbers, keep up, you know, I mean, that rotation, you know, everything that they did, whoever the Spurs center is, I think might get that consideration for taking for basically taking that Tim Duncan role. You know, I mean, if they let everything go and, you know, if Powell doesn't rotate or Aldridge doesn't rotate so they could funnel them, then I think, you know, Kawhi gets more consideration because he's doing it alone. But if those guys can, you know, help, whoever plays the center, and I think it might be Aldridge that does it. But I think they might get consideration if the Spurs keep on par with that same defense as last season. So I think that's going to be my only dark horse, the Spurs center, whoever that may be.
So if Kawhi wins Defensive Player of the Year, if he's fortunate enough to do that again, that'd be 3 years in a row. But do you think that's enough at this stage of Kawhi's career? This guy's been on a meteor level of success so far in the NBA. NBA Finals MVP, Defensive Player of the Year a couple times in a row, phenomenal player, all-star, all those things. Should he be the MVP of the NBA this upcoming season?
Do you think that that's what he needs? Is that what you're asking?
Do you think he needs it? Do you think he's on that trajectory? Do you think it's the same question about Defensive Player of the Year? I mean, do you think he's a lock for the MVP? Let me give you some things to try to convince you. You know, he's clearly a scorer now. He's number one or number two option all the time on San Antonio's team. You know, again, he's got the Defensive Player of the Year. You know, stats with him. He plays that way. He could win the Defensive Player of the Year again. His team is going to be good. I mean, the Spurs are, you know, I'm not as optimistic as you are. You're saying that a number one or a number two, potentially. And I'm thinking there may be like a three or a four. But the team is going to be good in the West. But, you know, he's got to be at the level that he was last year. Because I think that Steph Curry's going to drop back. I mean, Steph is going to drop in touches. His scoring's going to drop because Durant being there. The only other guy that I could see challenging for MVP, I mean, and obviously LeBron is always in the conversation, but that's the only other guy I could see challenging for MVP is Damian Lillard. I think he could win it as well, just from what he means for that team. But I think Kawhi is so complete. And he was so close last year, I thought, even though, I mean, that Steph got a unanimous MVP, I was blown away by that because of the steps forward that Kawhi made last year. If Kawhi just maintains his success from last year, because the field is going to get worse, I feel like Kawhi Leonard's the MVP of the NBA.
Well, to the question of does he need it, you know, where do you go from finals MVP? You know, from that, I think you're on to, you know, forward where just championships. That's how I think about it. Because everything else, you know, regular season MVP, that's behind, you know, as far as, you know, our, you know, stature or whatever you want to say, behind the finals MVP. Same thing with defensive player of the year. Finals MVP is really the highest one you can get if your team wins, right? So I don't think he needs it. You know, I agree with you. The only thing I'm going to fear, and especially that there's going to be people that are just going to go insane, is that if the Warriors are the number one seed and Curry steps back, but he's still one of the top players, and Durant does very well, I'm thinking they might go co-MVPs. I think that's going to be the possibility that's going to that they're going to be focusing on. You know, co-MVPs, two guys from the same team.
Has that ever happened?
I don't think so. But, you know, number one, Westbrook's going to consider that a slap in the face, and I think that's what might cause Klay Thompson to leave if that happens. But I think that's very possible with how much attention these guys are getting, if those are the 1-2 punches in from the best team in the league. But, you know, aside from that, I mean, what do you do if, like how you say, Damian Lillard, what if his team gets a better seed than San Antonio's? I mean, you have to put him in that consideration. What happens if the Timberwolves happen to be a 3-5 seed? I think, you know, if Karl Anthony Towns, you have to say his whole name, by the way. You just can't call him Cat.
I know you hate it.
If Karl Anthony Towns averages a double-double or a triple-double, I think you have to give him consideration if they go back and they have home court advantage in the playoffs as far as seeding goes. So I think you really have to put consideration in that because of where they were last season, you know, what its contributions were. So, I don't think Kawhi's a lock, but I don't really think that matters. You know, finals MVP, all you need now is championships. That's all people are going to care about now, and that's what he should care about, I think.
See, man, I think it matters so much because you talk about your resume and just checking things off the list. MVP of the league is certainly on there. I mean, that's got to be a goal. It's got to be a goal.
Really? Well, I mean, in this day and age where it's so soft, you know, he doesn't play soft, but the soft players get it. You know, the shooters get it. So I mean, the only way you can do it is outshoot them, and that's really – the shots that you know what, and I might get heat for this if there's any Golden State fans watching this. Those are just lucky shots. If they miss half of those shots, they're just I mean they're extremely bad shots. So I mean, those are the guys that get the MVP now. Should he get it because he plays both sides of the ball? Of course, I think he would be far and away the best the number one pick for that, for being the most valuable player and the defensive player of the year. But, you know, I just think there's too many factors working against them. And, you know, I'm just that kind of person that, you know, at the end, because that's what fans talk about, right? Well, look who has more rings. That's the discussion. Who has more rings? It doesn't matter who the player is. You know, if they have 5 rings compared to 2 rings, you know, the 5 rings are better. So just get those rings, Kawhi.
So to switch off Kawhi, because I think it's been a Kawhi heavy podcast. Let's talk about rookies. What do you expect from DeJounte Murray the first couple of months of the season? Do you expect anything out of him? Do you expect him to play?
I think I've said this before, and I'm going to echo this for his whole rookie season. I'm expecting him to be what I thought George Hill was going to be, a defensive-minded, long-armed shooting guard point guard that can play the shooting guard position, whatever you want to call it. He's really a combo guard. I think you could even get away with him playing the 3. I know he's pretty skinny. You know, he's not packing all those pounds, but I mean, he's long. Bruce Bowen wasn't the you know, huskiest guy out there.
Right.
So I think he can play the 3, especially with this quicker NBA. I think what I'm expecting him to be is not one of those guys with long arms that forgets that he has long arms, a la George Hill. I mean, that's one of the things that really bugged me about his tenure in San Antonio. The guy would have his arms down. He wouldn't contest shots. He wouldn't try to, you know, go, like Kawhi, go for steals. This guy, if he can, instead of trying to look at Tony Parker for some motivation and all that, I mean, the guy really looks up to Jamal Crawford. He used to work out with Jamal Crawford. He used to shoot around with Jamal Crawford, play against him. You know, I stick to that, in my opinion. But learn defense from Kawhi. I think he can be that other guy, a better defensive option than Danny Green, because he has the speed and he has the long arms. So I'm expecting him really to be fingers crossed, the second best defensive player when he's on the floor, just because of that.
Wow, that's huge. I mean, that would be amazing. I don't know if I'm so optimistic about him on the defensive end. And I say that just because I just don't know much about him, to be in all honesty. But from a defensive perspective, when I look at his overall contribution to the team, I expect DeJounte Murray in the first couple of months of the season to make Tony Parker expendable. I mean, I know that's kind of a big statement, but I think that he's going to come in and the expectations for him are pretty high. I think that he's going to be so solid that it makes the Spurs and Spurs fans take a look at Tony Parker and say, you know, thanks for everything that you've done, but, you know, he's expendable now in the form of a trade perhaps during the year. I know it's big predictions, but I expect a whole lot out of DeJounte Murray.
That's not a bad prediction. You know, Spurs fans are probably going to want to just, you know, what was it? Do an unnatural act. Yeah, to you with that statement. But, you know, I mean, depending how the Spurs play, if Tony Parker is going to have a role where he's just going to bring up the ball and he's going to give it, you know, down, he's going to throw it down the post to LaMarcus Aldridge or Pau Gasol or high post to one of those two or give it to Kawhi so he can do his thing and he's just going to be standing around, Murray's going to be the better, cheaper option because at the same time, he can guard better than Tony Parker can. I'm one of those guys that thinks that Tony Parker's defense is underappreciated. He played great defense against Steph Curry numerous times last season. But, you know, if that's going to be the role, then I agree with you. He's expendable because then you bring Patty Mills off the bench. You still have Ginobili. You have other options that really, I mean, it could, you know, sort of level out the team. So, I agree with you. If that's going to be his role, where Parker's really the fourth or fifth option, or if he's going to be open, he's going to get the ball, spot up shooter. I think that's good enough because really with the other three options, if things are going awry, if things are getting crazy, you know, if they need a calming influencer, I think those three guys can handle that. So, you know, if it's going to be, you know, Tony Parker spot up shooter, you know, I think you're right. Murray can really make him expendable, but if it's going to be Tony Parker pick and roll, Tony Parker pick and pop, you know, move around, do the loop play, you know, really focus on getting others involved, I think Parker will still be the better option in that sense.
Yeah, agree. Well, let me talk about this other guy that I followed for the first couple of years of his career. I know you have too, probably for different reasons, because he makes me absolutely insane. But what does Kyle Anderson have to do to take it to the next step this year?
Well, if you're going to call out Kyle Anderson for making you crazy, I think we got to know why.
So, the whole slow-mo moniker and the fact that it is so fitting because he looks like he is moving, and to be quite honest, he is moving a couple of steps slower than everyone else. I think he gets exposed. I don't think he's a strong shooter. I don't know what he does half the time when he's out there. He seems like he's just taking up space. You know, I don't feel like he's being aggressive. I don't know what he brings to the Spurs. I was amazed that he made it out of Austin. I mean, Popovich obviously sees something in him that I don't see, but that's why Popovich makes the big bucks and I don't.
Well, of course not. You're media, bro. You matter just as much as the coach of that team.
Probably not for long if I keep saying stuff like that, but I feel like I just don't know what Kyle Anderson brings to the team. I mean, I don't feel like he's ever played a meaningful role. I mean, ever meaning the 2 years of experience, one of them which he was a rookie. But, you know, last year he was supposed to do something impactful. And, I mean, all he did was just spell players for minutes. And if that's his role, then that's great. But, I mean, I don't know if anybody expects a lot out of Kyle Anderson. I guess I'm asking if you do, but if all he's there is just to take minutes while people are taking a rest, then I feel like he could probably do that. But I don't even track any stats on Kyle Anderson. I don't know what the plus minus is when he's on the court, but I would imagine that it would not be impressive, you know?
I know what you're saying. I agree with you on that. One of the things that drives me crazy about him is, you know, he's just, I mean, he's a soft body. He doesn't look like he lifts.
Right.
He's one of those people, you know, I had a kid like that. I had a kid like that during summer league. He was a little bit, you know, he was on the, he wasn't fat, but I mean, he was on the, you know, like the husky side. And by the way, you're not fat, you just have fat. But he was a little heavy set guy. I had him as my stretch four, right? And one of the things I told him was, you know, I want you to sort of train where, like a running back, you know, build up that muscle so when you need a, when you need to post up, you know, get those glutes big so you could push people around, but at the same time, try to keep that speed, you know? He ended up trying to just cut, just try to lose weight. And, you know, I thought it was just lost potential, drove me crazy. That's what I see from Kyle Anderson. You know, I wish he would go to the gym, get rid of some of that fat, make it into muscle, or just get heavier, you know, so you could play against the big guys. Maybe move to a five where it won't, the posting post-ups won't hurt that much on the defensive end. But, you know, offensively, really, I think he's going to stay in the same position because come playoff time, who can he really guard off? The competitive teams. He can't really play against Golden State unless he's playing against David West. I think he would own David West on a you know, on the speed section. You know, but other than that, you know, OKC, I wouldn't really go with Kyle Anderson. I wouldn't go with Kyle Anderson against the Timberwolves or you know any other teams like that. So I mean, it really depends on matchups. I don't really expect much of him. I think, you know, how can he really change his game? He worked on his shot. He's a better shooter than he was 2 years ago. He's not faster. He's not one of those guys that can get faster. If you look at his feet, you know, those times that I've seen him play, his watching him run hurts my feet. You know, that's how I feel about it. So I don't think he's going to get faster. I wish he would just get stronger, and I think that would help him, especially in that in those post moves. I think he could post up if he would get stronger. He could post up like how Dirk used to post up, remember? I mean, he wouldn't really post up five backups and then back up for a few times and then shoot. He'd go one bump and then shoot, and I think that's what he can do. Or this little mid-range shot, a three-pointer. I think he could, you know, work off of that. But, you know, he's not even going to have DL speed. So I think this might be his last season to see what the Spurs can get out of him. With this talented roster that they have this season and with the talent that they have with Bertens and all these other guys, might be Jonathan Simmons last year too, and these guys came up together. So, I mean, this might be the last season to see what those Austin, those former Austin Toros, now Austin Spurs guys have to contribute to the team.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's got to be there has to be some kind of, I don't know if leash is the right word, but there's got to be some kind of plan, and I'm sure obviously there is, right? There's some kind of plan with those guys, but just looking at Kyle Anderson, that's a cut situation, you know. I don't know with Simmons. You look at the athletic ability, and another team could be intrigued because, you know, he just didn't get in on the Spurs system for some reason. Maybe they think it's too complicated or what. But you could chalk it up to that because Simmons is so athletic. Well, you look at Anderson, and he's to the points you're saying, he's not athletic, he's not a big body, he's just some dude, right? And he's not
some dude. A millionaire dude, bro.
Well, a millionaire dude, yeah. He's a dude with money. But, you know, I don't even see another team saying, even in a I just don't know a situation where, and he does make a ton of money on his contract, I just don't see another situation where another team looks at him and says, okay, let me trade for that guy in some kind of bundle. Maybe just a trade to cut. I don't get it. I don't understand. I didn't like the pick when he got selected a couple of years ago. I didn't like him in Austin. I don't like him on San Antonio. I'd rather those minutes go someplace else. I'm just really bitter on Kyle Anderson. I don't know what he can do to take it to the next step. I think you're just going to get more of the same this year. And the way that the West especially is configured, I don't think you can afford to have Kyle Anderson on the court.
I just think that's with the Spurs, you know. And I mean, I get the intrigue. He's really a three who can play the four, right? That's really the entry because then you could go small, but at the same time, he doesn't really bring any of that speed, any of that shooting.
He's a three that can't play the three.
I'm going to hate to compare this like this because it might be the ultimate insult, but I see him like Bonner. You know, I mean, the whole point of Bonner was, you know, stretch four, right? In my opinion, because he wasn't really that good of a rebounder, he wasn't that good defensively. I always used to think just go small. It's the same thing. You're probably even better. than putting Bonner on the floor. I think I could say that since he's not on the team anymore. I don't even think that's a mortal sin to Spurs Nation. So, but, you know, with Anderson, I get the entry. But, I mean, I could see him with other teams. That might take him up and cut some other guy that, you know, that they just signed this season. I could see him going with the Warriors, and I think he would make an impact there because of what he does. I mean, he could be that quick outlet guy, you know, I mean, because they're really not going to play defense. And if he plays next to Durant, I mean, Durant's wingspan there sort of bails him out of the situations. I could see him with the Cavs. I would really love him with the Cavs. I think he would really bring what they're missing with Kevin Love at the four. You know, Kyle Anderson and Tristan Thompson, Kyle Anderson, even Kevin Love. Kyle Anderson, I think, and Channing Frye, maybe, you know, imagine that lineup with LeBron. I think that would be a dangerous lineup. I just think that with the Spurs, he's just a bad fit with what the Spurs, you know, really need out of him, because they really thought he was going to be the next D.O. I'm sure about that. So, right. I mean, the fact that he can't be, you know, and I mean, those are tough shoes to fill. You know, we sort of make fun of Bobo because he was a little bit on the heavy side later in his career, and especially with the Spurs. But I mean, this guy was a one back in France, and then he could play the two, he could play the three, played the four, and then he played the five sometimes. So, I mean, those are heavy shoes to fill from the get-go.
So you talked about, you know, maybe some trades during the course of the year, and maybe some cuts. Do you think that the Spurs need anything and any particular players that they should target sometime during this year that may get cut, or, you know, certainly before the trade deadline, of course, but anybody that – what are the Spurs needs that they're still there on the roster, and do you see them targeting any particular players?
I really wanted Paul to be on here for this question, because I'm going to bring up a situation, and I don't – and, you know, I don't want him to be like, oh, you know – Jose's an idiot for bringing that up if it's not true or it can't happen. But I was wondering, can Tim Duncan come back even though he's retired? I mean, he counts against the salary cap, right? Against their, you know, he's on the books. So I was wondering, you know, what if Tim Duncan gets the itch and he says, okay, I'll come off the bench. Those two are starting, or, you know, they can do something, you know, with whatever the rotations are. I think that would be pretty interesting. I don't think he'll do it. You know, the way he looked in those training camp pictures, he looks skinny fat, you know.
Yeah.
So, sort of like, you know, people thought he looked in good shape. I mean, you sort of saw the little gut popping out. You know, he has – I don't think he's been working out. And with somebody with bad knees, I could sort of relate to him. Not to the extent that he had those bad knees, but, you know, my knees bother me a bit. You know, it's hard for somebody who has bad knees to say, you know what, I'm going to train – really hard in a month to get back, you know, into the NBA. So, you know, I just don't see that happening. But it'd be interesting, Tim Duncan. Ray Allen's always popping up, right? You know, as a signee. That could be interesting, you know, especially with how the Spurs are going to be built in the front court. You know, they might need that shooting. But I kind of like the team. I like the team, how it's set up. Burton's, you know, Livio Charles, and, you know, all these guys, the two RGs who I forget their names. Good thing I forget their names, because I'm going to butcher the names if I remember them. But, you know, I think they're all going to be good fits. I'm telling you, this is going to be the prime team to go back to that beautiful game type of setup, or probably a more effective one on the offensive end. So unless it's Tim Duncan, I just don't really see anybody getting signed or cut or traded.
See, there's only one name that really sticks out to me. That the Spurs could probably possibly target. And it's one of these scenarios where it really depends on how the current team performs and if there's any injury. Because I'm like you, I really like the team, aside from Anderson. But, and you look at that two-guard spot and track the depth of that two-guard spot, you got a guy who was stone cold last year, right, in Danny Green. And then you have Manu coming off the bench. He's 38, right? 38?
Yeah, I think so. He's 2 years younger than Tim, right? So, yeah, 38, 39, possibly.
So he's 38, and then you got a guy who's cold. And then that's it, really. Right? And then you got this mix of other player ones that are going to go up to play twos, and then, you know, possibly some threes that are coming down. So it's an odd fit. So you got to depend on Danny Green being on. And you got to depend on Manu staying healthy. If one of those two guys goes down or they're just cold, I could see the Spurs going after Brandon Jennings from New York. What do you think of that?
I'm going to disagree with you for just the main reason where I think that's where DeJounte Murray comes up. Because I think he could play the two. You remember, and Pop's not closed-minded to playing or starting even a two-point guard set. You remember when TJ Ford was on the team?
Yeah.
And he started on the shooting guard spot, you know, alongside Parker. They had that two-point guard spot. He would have, Pop, I think, would have rolled with that, if TJ didn't get hurt. So I think that's what we might see there. And then everybody really gets, bumped up to, whatever, because then you could bring Patty Mills. You could go in for whichever one. You really don't like a Patty and a Tony type of a lineup. But, at the same time, also with Manu, you could bring in Manu. You know, if you trade away a Danny Green, you could bring in Manu, and he could fit with any of the two, depending on minutes and the foul situation. So I think that's where Murray's really going to pop up. I think he's going to be that guy where Pop's going to be confident where whoever gets in foul trouble, just put that guy in there and then you can make something out of any lineup. One of the things that I hope happens, I know I'm getting ahead of myself. Can you imagine, Murray and you sign George Hill in the offseason if he doesn't sign an extension? I don't think he signed one, right, with the Jazz. Can you imagine two players like that starting for the Spurs or, coming off the bench, with that impact, really, they would play the same type of game, long defensive-minded guys. I think San Antonio would be, favorites to win the title. I know I'm getting ahead of myself, but yeah. That's how I see Murray.
It just depends if Murray can shoot, and I think he can, right? I think he can, but it's all about that, because defensively you're saying that, he'll do well. I'll take your word on it. I don't know much about him defensively, but it's just his offensive game's got to translate, and if it does, I think the sky's the limit. You're right.
And I agree with you. I think he can shoot, even though his shot's inconsistent. I mean, when you see him shoot, it's not a bad shot.
No.
It's not a Sean Marion shot.
In the NBA.
Yeah. And when Chip, works with him, I think it's going to be one of those things, where they're probably going to see his feet. How is he shooting? At what point is he releasing? And then when you work out one of those little tweaks, you tweak it a little bit, then he's going to be a really good shooter. So I'm with you. I think his shot's kind of spotty because he needs a little tweak somewhere, but he doesn't need to rebuild the whole shot or his whole form, and I think he'll be good with that. I mean, even with the Spurs, a corner three, he's going to be gold with that team.
So let's close out with this because the first game of preseason is tonight. So round out the month of October. In preseason, the Spurs play the Suns tonight, your Phoenix Suns. They play Atlanta, the Pistons, the Magic, and then the Heat. And that's it for the preseason. It's only five games. For some reason, I thought it was like double that. I thought it maybe was like 10 games for the preseason. Has it ever been longer than five games?
Oh, I don't know, but I don't think so, just because who would be paying attention? Everybody would be like resting their stars.
Five seems like it's appropriate, just the right amount. So out of those five games, what do you think the Spurs are going in, preseason? What do you think their record is?
I think they'll win tonight against Phoenix. And even though they're sitting a bunch of guys, then they play all the way until the 8th. They play the Hawks. I think they might lose that one. I think that's when, all the guys are going to be getting used to each other. I think the Phoenix game, because they're sitting a lot of guys, I think it's going to be a free-flow game.
Yeah.
One of the guys to watch out for, and we'll see how smart I look on this, I think the player to watch out for against the Suns is going to be Bertans, especially, if they go small ball, just to see how he plays that position. If he can do good defensively in that, I think it's going to open up possibilities, for him to be that, lankier Diao guy. But, I have them winning against the Suns, losing against the Hawks. Pistons are going to be a crapshoot. Yeah. I'll say they win against the Pistons. I'll say they lose against the Magic. They win against the Heat, and then they lose against the Rockets.
Oh, so, I don't even have them playing the Rockets. Do they have the Rockets as well? I thought it was only five games. I didn't have them as playing
three. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's six. So I have them. Yeah.
So I'll tell you, I think that each one of these matchups, this is a perfect preseason for the Spurs for a lot of the reasons that you just said, that there are individual players that are going to have interesting and unique matchups that are really going to test them and the Spurs system this preseason. With the Suns, like you said, it's kind of free-flowing. And you said maybe Bertans has – that's his opportunity in that game, small ball. I think the Atlanta game is really interesting. Because of the Dwight Howard situation. And Millsap's still there, right?
Yeah.
I think that's interesting for the new look front court of the Spurs, right? I'd like to see David Lee get in there and see what he can do. The Pistons game, that's just a team with a whole lot of grit. And then for the Magic, you know, I'm with you. I think that they probably lose that game with the Magic. But for the Miami game, excuse me, I think I swallowed a fly or something. That Miami game, I think that's it's going to test the front court, and then I want to see the point guard play. I want to see how the Spurs handle that. And then with Houston, because I didn't even know that there was a game, but I'd like to see how they play with James Harden at point. I want to see what that does, if anything, you know, if they can expose that.
And that Pistons team is going to be interesting because I wonder if they're going to start Baynes and Boban.
Well, that would be ideal for you, right?
And Ryan McCallum, that other guy. What was his name? The one you liked. I literally forgot his name.
Oh, Ray McCallum.
Ray McCallum. He's on the Pistons, right?
You know what? I'm not going to lie. I lost track of sweet baby Ray. I lost track of him. He didn't show up at the family reunion, so
he's with the Pistons. So, I mean, that's going to be an interesting game if those three play at the same time. And, you know, that's one of those games where, like, the scrubs, like Ray McCallum and all those guys have a big game, so.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for that. And then at the start of the season, which starts October 25th, they've got Golden State. Then they've got the Kings in Sacramento, new stadium. And their first home game is against New Orleans on the 29th. And there was reports that Anthony Davis spent his whole summer watching Tim Duncan videos. So a little homage to Timmy D. But, you know, I've got them losing against Golden State. I've got them losing against Sacramento. And I've got them losing against New Orleans.
No, you don't. You don't have them going 0-3.
I got them going 0-3.
Oh, my Atlanta. I think they beat the Warriors. I think it's going to be one of those games where the Warriors aren't going to know how to guard the front court. That's going to be a new dimension that they haven't seen. I think the Kings are just going to be out of enthusiasm. Did you see that new statue they got?
No.
It was like a piglet statue outside of their arena. It was like this artsy thing where it's like made up of different things and it's supposed to be like piglet. It costs like $8 million. I think that's just going to, you know, just ruin it all for them. Anthony Davis, I think he causes a lot of trouble, but with this front court, I mean, if he gets into foul trouble, I think they're going to just get him on whoever's hot, you know, between Power or LaMarcus. I wish guys would stop looking at Tim Duncan as inspiration. I hate to say it like that, but he's not really a Tim Duncan player. He's not a guy who you can look at in the paint, give him the ball, and, you know, work your thing. Why doesn't he call the Dream?
Yeah.
Olajuwon. I think he'd be a better Olajuwon type player than Duncan. Because, you know, Duncan, he wasn't that skilled. You know, I don't think he was that skilled. You know, he used his height pretty good, his wingspan. But if you look at how he played, it was all instinct. That, you know, it was all his brain.
And angles and all that. He was very good at that. But I know exactly what you're saying. I mean, Davis needs, you know, 5-6 feet from the basket, right? Maybe even a little further than that to do some move. Similar to how Hakeem did it. That was a perfect analogy. Tim Duncan is not that player.
And remember when Dwight Howard took Olajuwon's advice, he dominated, and then he kind of thought of himself higher than that and stopped calling, I guess. So.
Right.
But I think that's the player that he needs to be. Well, we'll see, though. But I have them going 3. I'll have them going 3-0.
Well, there you go. Well, Jose, that music means that we are at the end of episode 412. Gotta go for the evening. But you can follow Jose at JR1023 on Twitter and me at RMC_PS. Make sure to give us a follow or make sure at a minimum to follow at Project Spurs. Go hit up ProjectSpurs.com and subscribe to this show, the Spurs Cast, on iTunes. Thank you, Jose, and you listeners, you're welcome. Thank you.